Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today is Tell Del Tuesday, and with me today is Mike Johnson out of Georgetown, Texas. Mike's got an incredible story, has been in 72 passive deals, and actually did one lead deal himself as a lead investor. He's been a teacher for us in the past. He's been here for a long time, and glad to have him back on the show again. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Dale. Thanks for having me on again.
Let's take it back to past 2011, back in the beginning. How did you find us, and what motivated you to look us up? You've got quite a past, you've got all kinds of stories to tell, but let's just talk about what made you start looking for something like this.
Yeah, so I was listening to the radio and heard your ads. I had sold a house out in Oregon, and it was a paid-off house. So we had some money to invest, and I'd always wanted to do real estate investing. My dad had done some small apartment complexes, like 8 and 12 units back in Oregon, and some single family homes. So, and I was the painter in the summers. So he would hire me to paint these units. So I was kind of, you know, familiar with it. I didn't know any of the financial parts of it, but I figured it must be good because my dad was doing it. So I wanted to do it. I'd read Rich Dad, Poor Dad multiple times and was looking for some way to get into it. And I heard the radio show. It's like, oh, a mentor. That sounds like what I need. So I went to your little free workshop and signed up and got the ball rolling.
Well, let's talk about your background just a little bit, because you have quite the technical background, I'd say. And I'm curious about how somebody with your background sees something like this, because a lot of people would listen and think of this more of a skeptically, put it that way. What's your background, and how did that form what you were thinking and seeing when you came here?
Yeah, so I'm an engineer, a mechanical engineer at Oregon State, and out of school, went to work for Boeing up in Seattle, and then saw the space station was hiring, so I went to Alabama in Huntsville area and started working on the space station project for 5 years, and then both my boys were born there. The oldest one started talking a little bit Southern. So I thought, you know, it's probably time we take it back to the grandparents back in Oregon. So we moved back. I worked at Hewlett-Packard for the next 22 years and actually converted over to software engineering. And that's when they moved me down to Texas back in 2009. They were consolidating all the software people in the Austin area. And that's how I ended up here, and that's how we ended up selling our home and looking for something else. And so I knew real estate, after reading the books on it, was the way to get cash flow. And so I knew that if I wanted to retire anytime before 65, I needed to get some cash flow going to start paying the bills. And that's how I ended up going to your seminar.
So you already understood the benefits of real estate enough to know that's what you wanted to do. What attracted you to this group of people?
Just the mentoring. So I knew I needed help. I needed a team, right? That's what the books talk about. You need to get your team around you. It's like, well, how the hell do I do that? So I decided that, you know, if that's what Lifestyles was providing, that's what I needed. I needed a group that has already created this, you know, team of professionals, you know, CPAs and contractors, plumbers, electricians, all that stuff that you need when you're doing single family. And so that's kind of what my first focus was single family. I didn't even know about the multifamily until I took that 2-day class of yours. And then it's like, wow, that opened my eyes. It's like I could do multifamily and not have to get my hands dirty and do all this work. So when I first started Lifestyles back in 2012, when I first started really investing, we did 3 multifamily investments and we did 3 single families because I wanted to try both. You know, what's going to work out best for me.
And how did that work out?
Well, those first 3 apartments, we still own one of them. That's that Jerry's project in San Antonio, and it's, I think for the 80,000 that we invested in that, it's returned about 300,000 so far, and there's probably another 500,000-600,000 in equity in it, and it's still pumping out 20% a year.
Wow.
So that one's the second one, second multifamily. We tripled our money in 3 years on that when we sold it. And the third one, same thing. I think it might have even been a quadruple in the Austin area. Both of those were Austin area properties. The single families did okay also. They pumped out, you know, the $200-$300 a month cash flow for the, I think I owned them for 3 years and sold them for some decent equity. Had I held them a little bit longer, it would have been even greater, you know, because single family homes back in 2016, 17, 18 were really climbing. But I listened to my mentor back in 2016. It's like, sell your single family homes. That was you, Dale. And I put all that money into multifamily, and that worked out great too, right? Multifamily was doing great. So back then.
How did you decide which deals to get into?
Back then it was, you know, we had all kinds of mixers with multifamily where you could networking events that you could meet these leads. And I met Jerry at one and met Bruce at the next one, Terry Matheny. So all these guys, you know, were at these networking events and I'd get to know them. And before I'd write them a check, you know, for $80,000 or $100,000, I wanted to at least know the deals. In fact, several of them I'd pick out on boat. We had a boat club membership down in Lake Travis, and I actually invited them out on the boat just to get to know them. So
that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's
interesting way to do due diligence.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know much about the deals. You know, I just kind of had to rely on what they were telling me back then. Now I'm a lot more sophisticated, and so I look a lot deeper into what the deal looks like, you know, what city it's in, what's the economics of the city that we're looking at and kind of the area. And so I'm a little more involved, especially now that I've done my own deal, my own syndication, kind of know what to look for.
When you started investing, did you have a plan on how to spread your money out? Did you say, I'm going to do this much here, this much there, this size, you know, keep all my investments at a certain size, or just hit and miss? You just did what you felt like that day.
Yeah, back then, you know, there weren't a lot of syndications and leads in the Central Texas area to choose from. So it was, you know, I didn't want to go more than 100,000 in any one deal. So, and I think I started my investing with about 400,000, you know, from the sale of that house out in Oregon. So I wanted to do, you know, some single family. So I did three of those, which weren't very much out of pocket for single families. And that's part of the single family issue. Is like, if you've got significant money to invest, it takes a while if you're going to do, you know, 10,000, 20,000 at a time in a single family. So that's why I kind of leaned more into the multifamily, because you could do larger amounts. So I did three multifamilies that first year. I think I did one the second year, maybe four the third year, after a couple of them had refinanced and sold out. So I had some more money to invest. Also pulled some money out of an IRA 2 years in a row, paid the taxes, you know, paid the penalty, and invested. I actually tracked one of those where I pulled money out of the IRA. I pulled like 68,000 out of an IRA in 2013 to get, and then pay tax penalty. That's like 17,000. So that left me with 50,000 to invest. I put that into a deal. That deal quadrupled in 3 years, reinvested that into a couple more deals. They sold, reinvested that. And now that 50,000 has grown into about 600,000 with about 30,000 in cash flow. So paying that 17,000 taxes and penalty, you know, pales in comparison to what happened in 10 years. With the growth of that.
Yeah, I don't think very many people can see that. And I would understand why. If, you know, if you're pulling it out and you're putting it in a savings account and earning 3%, you're not getting there very fast. So, Mike, as we go through this, and you kept building up your portfolio, what were the challenges as you kept going? Were there any, or was it just smooth sailing all the way?
It was smooth sailing, actually, up until interest rates started climbing. And that's when kind of things went off the rails a little bit. I think I was irrationally exuberant, is a term I've heard you use in 2022. 2022 was a big year. We had a lot of sales that year, so I had a lot of money to reinvest. And I found deals and knew the leads well, but I wasn't looking at the deal itself. And so they ended up being some variable rate loans in some of those deals. And that kind of hurt us when the interest rate spiked up. So,
yep, I think that's a problem for a bunch of people that really weren't paying attention to that until it was too late on that. When did you decide you were going to be a lead yourself, and what brought that, idea into your mind?
So in 2016, I guess back up. So 2015, I told my boss at Hewlett Packard, things were going pretty well at multifamily, and I was kind of spreading the word around work, trying to get other people interested in it. And I told him, it's like, hey, if there's ever a early retirement package, a layoff package, let me know, because I might be interested. Well, a few months later, in February 2016, he calls me into the office one morning and hands me a pink slip. It's like, well, I hope this is good news. I'm like, well, you didn't warn me, but I'll take it. So I was retired in 2016. And after that, it's like, well, my multifamily friends said, hey, why don't you come join the club, become a lead. So I started looking for a property in 2016 and found one up here in Austin, a 64 unit, and got 30 passive investors. And we raised $1.6 million for the down payment in 24 hours and bought my first property. So we ran that for, I think we bought it for around $5 million and ran that for 2.5 years and sold it for $6 million. Got out and did okay. Thought, this is a lot of work. So decided that my 20 passive investments, and by the time I sold it, I think I was up to 30 passive investments. I'm getting cash flow out of these. I think I'll just stop here and focus more on the passive side.
That's interesting. You did it so young. But the older you get, the less you want to go out there and actually move the rock. The rock, right?
Yeah, and literally, I was out there with my pickup truck, had a load of rock in the back, 2-3 inch rocks back there, and I was shoveling it out into the grounds around the building to cover all the mud just to make it look pretty. So,
wow, I didn't know it was going to be a literal statement, but I'll take it.
Yep.
All right, so when you did that, what made you choose that property? What was exciting about that one? For somebody who's thinking about doing one of their own, why did you pick that one? You made $1 million on it. It's a pretty good deal. What was the what did you see in that one that made it look interesting to you?
That one, it was in kind of a rough part of town, but it was slowly gentrifying. Maybe about a mile away, there were houses being torn down and big two-story brand new ones being built. So I knew things were getting better, and slowly inching toward this. The area, a previous group had purchased this and a bunch of the fourplexes around it, and had fixed it up, painted them, so they all look similar. They were only able to do about half of the fourplexes. I'm guessing there were 20 of them. So 10 of them had been rehabbed and kind of spattered around. 10 had not, and they were like crack houses. I mean, they were bad. So the one right next to me was still in that sad shape. So kind of some rough clientele near us. But our building had been fixed up and painted, looked pretty. And I thought, well, this would be a fairly easy lift. There's not a lot of work to be done. They had rehabbed one of the units to a really nice rehab and got $899 for rent, and where all the other ones were in the low 700s. So we thought, well, if we could just rehab a few more, we can start, moving the rents up with a nice rehab. So we did that. We rehabbed four more into a really nice state and got not quite $899, but got $850. So we were able to raise rents $150, which moves the needle. And then, as in the Austin area back then, rents were rising kind of everywhere. So we ended up around $1,050 by the time we sold it. It was kind of our average rent without having to do a whole bunch of work. So that was
why'd you like to sell it?
So the neighborhood was not getting better fast enough for us. It was just slowly moving towards us. We had issues with the neighbors. We had issues with some of the tenants. We had a property management company for a couple years, and they went through five different property managers. Well, we were there on site, a couple times a week, trying to help them out, get them going the right direction. they were had struggled with occupancy. I think we were in the 70% for those 2 years while we had this property management company. We finally fired him. We hired Shippy, one of our multifamily Central Texas leads that was doing really well. So he took over with his property management company, got us up to 100% within a month. So we hired the right gal behind the desk. She filled us up and we kept it 100% for the next year and thought, okay, let's go ahead and get out while the value's high.
Getting when the getting is good is what I've always called it.
Yep. So All right.
Had enough after that. One's all it took. Got that out of your system.
It was a fixed 1960s property, 1965, cast iron pipes. And we'd replaced several of them underground. And, you know, there's always issues with leaks. It was a flat roof. And so when it rained, we'd have, I think the parking lot had been redone so many times that now the building was lower than the parking lot. So when it rained, water would sit and it would leak into several units and just all the stuff you get with an old property like that, that we got tired of having to fix, cutting into our cash flow.
Well, typically what happens if you do stay in the operational side of the business, your mind is going to push you to move up from Class D properties like that to Class C properties to Class B properties. Yeah. In other words, newer and newer and newer. You keep trying to get away from it. But the beauty of it is that, you know, these properties, they can make money at whatever age they are if you know how to operate them, pay the right price for them. The problem is if you think that they're all the same property, because they're not. I mean, you know, you talk about 60s construction, that's 60 years old, right?
Right.
So any kind of an engineer at all puts that down on a piece of paper and starts looking at the cost of just maintaining that building, and you see you've got a different world than you do in a newer property. All right, I think that's a good place to take a break, and Mike, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back with the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
To creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Want to build income without a second job? Learn how real estate investing can help you create extra income one step at a time with Lifestyles Unlimited. Text radio to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007. Presented by Lifestyles Unlimited.
You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. With me here today is Mike Johnson, here for the Tell Del Tuesday Show. And Mike, as we come back, I'm going to change topics here real quick on you. I've got the expo coming up. And I'm pretty sure you've been to many of these expos. We've got the new one coming up in San Antonio here. It's going to be on March 13th and 14th. And my bus tour is going to be on March 12th. So that's Thursday is the bus tour. That's the 12th. Friday and Saturday's expo, 13th and 14th. Without putting you on the spot, because I didn't give you a heads up that I was going to ask you about this, tell us what your feelings were, your thoughts the first time you went to an expo. Did it kind of blow your mind?
Yeah, expo. I think I've been to almost every one, going back, almost 10 years now. And yeah, just meeting all these like-minded people, going to the classes, you know, really look forward to Dell's talk on, you know, Saturday morning. Kind of the keynote speak was always a highlight, you know, for everybody that would go listening to you talk, kind of laying out, you know, what went right, what went wrong, and what's going to happen next year. And you know, just the feeling you get. I know the road, when I did that, the bus trip you were talking about, you know, went on that the first few years and seeing all these different properties in cities I wasn't familiar with, right? So we were down in Houston at the expo in the early days and driving around Houston, getting to see some of these properties. And I'd invested in some of them, but I'd never seen them. So it was the first time I was actually, you know, laying hands on the brick. So it was very educational, very eye-opening.
Were you surprised how open people are at Lifestyles about their own personal finances and their investments?
Yeah, so it's not something that, you know, is normal in the American culture, but with lifestyles, you know, people are a lot more open, and I've become a lot more open, you know, with the amount of money that I've invested and what it's returned, and, you know, in the hopes of motivating other people to get on board. And I've been fortunate. A lot of my friends, neighbors have become members. My best friend up in the state of Washington, he's now an ambassador for Lifestyles, and he's hosting meetups, you know, a couple times a month in the Portland area. And he'll be at the Seattle 2-Day coming up and helping more people, you know, learn about this strategy.
Going back to this expo thing, I've always said for years and years, there's two parts of it that just blow me away the most. The first one is the bus tour. I mean, I can't even begin to explain how many people have come up to me and said, hey, I learned more in 1 day or 2 days on the bus tour than I did in a year of education, because you see it, you feel it, you smell it. I mean, it's nothing like it until you smell to class C or D and see what they look like when they're brand new after you renovate
them. Yeah, you're not kidding. Yep.
You just can't get your arms around that. It really does make a difference. Obviously, if you've owned one, then you know what that smell is, right? That's, as David Fisher likes to call it, the smell of money.
Yeah, exactly. Stale cigarettes and cat pee. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. So I've got to bring this up, though. Sorry to take this to part of your presentation, but the second one I think that's the most important is what we call the mixer. And this is where the syndicators, the lead investors, buy a table in a gigantic room, and they set up to meet people. And to me, this, every time I see it, it still blows my mind. I mean, 11 years you've been here, it just blows my mind. Because we set it up to where this big, giant room, everybody takes these tables, fills up, gets ready. And then we have this line of like literally 2,000 people standing outside the room in a long line wrapped around the whole building waiting to get in to see these people. And then, boom, it's like speed dating. We open the doors and in they go. Who knows how many hundreds, if not thousands of deals have been put together right there in that meeting room.
Yeah, did you ever, a lot of connections.
I'm sure you've been there to it. Have you? Were you ever? Did you ever get a table and do it? Try to be one of the guys that were in there?
Oh, yeah. When I was doing my deal, there were, I think, two expos in a row. I had my own table and meeting people, passing out cards. And, yep, I've been on both sides. This last year, we went in, and I think it was a lot nicer this last year. A lot more space, a lot more elbow room. So the room was bigger. I think we had an extra hour to do the mingling. So it was like a 3 hours that you had in there. There was food, so you didn't pass out while you're doing all this. So last year was great.
Yeah, we did improve it last year quite a bit. And the space was nice. I think we're going to do that again. We'll have that same amount of space. I think we actually even cut down the number of tables that we allowed in there. Whatever it was, either that or really expanded the space, but it did feel better.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. To get into one of those tables, you have to have been registered, and you have to register by February 16th. So for those of you out there that are members and you're thinking about you wanting to be on one of these tables as a syndicator, you need to get your registration in by February 16th. The other thing I'll tell you that's time urgent, two other things that are time urgent. One is the bus tours. There are 8 buses, but there's only 2 of them that I'm going to be riding in. So if you want to be with me, then you need to sign up right away and stipulate you want to be on Dell's bus. To do that, what you do is you text the word bus to 88007. That's 88007, the word bus, B-U-S, you said it, right? The other thing is the hotel space. And, you know, you're from Georgetown, which is not far away. But I hear that this thing is right across the street from the Riverwalk, which is a big, big tourist area. And I'm afraid people aren't going to be able to get hotel rooms if they don't register right now. What do you think?
Yeah, that's possible. Possible. Yeah. This year, unfortunately, I'll be my first expo I'm going to miss. My family decided they wanted to go to Hawaii, and they invited the grandparents, which is me and my wife, to go with them. So we're actually going to be with the grandkids in Hawaii during expo, unfortunately, this time. But
well, that's great. Where in Hawaii are you guys going?
Maui. So my wife and I go to Maui almost every year. And so we finally convinced the kids and the grandkids to come along. It wasn't real hard to convince them. they got a 6-month old. So, it'll be interesting to see how he does on the plane next month.
Yeah, I've been there four or five times, and it never gets old to me. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you get bored, we have lots of Lifestyles members there. Hundreds of them. We have a chapter there.
Yeah, I usually try and have a meetup when I'm over there.
Let's talk about the rest of your family. For that, I'm going to ask you this one. When you were leaving your job, I know that's a long time ago. Maybe can't remember this well, but you were telling all these people about this. I know you get excited about stuff. I did that too when I was excited about this stuff, and I was telling everybody, and nobody really wanted to listen. When you were telling them you were making this kind of money, and then eventually when you're telling them you were going to retire, what kind of responses did you get from all that?
I think most of them were pretty skeptical. Steve Anderson, I know you know him out in San Diego, so he and I worked together. And I told him about the multifamily. He was already a member doing single family stuff out in San Diego. And I was telling him about this, you know, great program I joined and I'm doing great in multifamily. And he's like, that wouldn't be Lifestyles, would it? And I'm like, yeah. So I got him to convert over to be a multifamily passive investor. So now he's been doing that and spreading the word out in California for a while.
Oh, he's been an incredible ambassador for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every time I go out there, they have something to do.
I can't think of any other work-related people that I got on board.
How about the family? I mean, you tell the family you're going to retire at 55. I mean, come on. Get out of here.
Right. Yeah. Both my kids are in. My younger son, he and I own an 8-unit that he runs up in the Dallas area, and he's looking for a 30-unit. And he's done other like 6 or 7 other passive deals. My older son is more interested in software engineering, but he's still doing some passive investing on the side.
That's interesting.
And then I got my whole Sunday school group to join. So all those guys are involved.
Oh my gosh. That's wonderful. That is wonderful. The beautiful thing is it is something that Lifestyles, we have the abundance mentality. You know, it's not the zero-sum game mentality. For me to make a buck, somebody else has to lose a buck. No, there's enough money for everybody to make a buck. So that abundance mentality affords bringing your friends and family into this business.
Yeah, some of my friends or family members, you know, they're more on the left-leaning side, and they've got a hard time with, you know, buying a property that's run down and then fixing it up and raising rents. And when you tell them you're going to raise rents, they feel bad for the people that are in the units.
What happens, for those of you who don't understand, is we buy these things from slumlords that have decided to have what I call the secret handshake, Mike. It's the handshake with the tenant. I will never raise your rent if you never complain about nothing working, everything being broken and ugly and dirty, rat infested, so forth, slumlord thing. If you don't complain about that, I won't raise your rent. And I just don't live by those terms. So I'm sure that if you've had that conversation with those friends and relatives, you've tried to communicate that there is a difference there. How do you see that?
Yeah, I think I said it's just all in how you communicate the difference. I think early on, I didn't have the tools and skills to communicate that effectively, but that's why I wanted you to say it, you know, because I know there's people out there that have that stigma, you know, we're just going to raise rents on people. It's like, well, you got to understand, you know, what's going on behind the scenes that we're fixing this place up. And some of the people that are in there now may move out, right? Because they're the purple Martians, as you call them.
Yeah, there is a difference. And I this is where I don't think compassionate people can actually understand this. And for years, I've claimed to be a financial conservative and a social liberal. So I've got compassion. But what I don't think the compassion, what they don't see because of their blind compassion, is that they don't see that these people living in slums are actually the ones that create the slum in many cases. They're the very people that are destroying things. They're the very people that don't pay their rent at all or not on time in little bits and pieces. And so the landlord has a very hard time as they're destroying their property. Not getting income, they have no real way to maintain the facility. I mean, if they were getting rich hand over fist, then, man, I would be right there with you screaming and yelling that this is a slumlord to just rake it in the cash and so on and so forth. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't happen or has not happened, but I'm saying that's not what we're doing. It's completely different. So when you went in and took over your property, you said you had to make some changes there. What kind of things did you do?
Yeah. I mean, so I'm in charge of the neighborhood, right? So I've got 64 units and I control who comes in and who goes out. And I want my tenants there to feel some sense of security and safety. You know, they don't want somebody coming in over in unit 23 that's going to start dealing drugs. You know, and we had that situation. I got a property manager that was there, I think 2 months, and the only new tenant she brought in was a drug dealer. And so we had to let her go, and the drug dealer ended up dying with some shootout, you know, off property. And so that solved that problem. But it's like, you know, I need to hire somebody that's going to effectively screen the tenants so we can get safe, regular people in here. So that's my job as the lead, to make sure things are set up to where we got good screening and keep everybody happy and keep tenants. Because if you got a nice neighborhood, you built a nice neighborhood, people are going to renew, and it's going to be a well-run property that turns a profit for the people that own it.
You know, what I found is that in most cases, if you go in and you make a place much nicer, the tenants won't leave because they're like,
right,
man, this is great. Finally, somebody's doing something. Well, your rent has to catch up to market now. And they realize that they're, because as soon as you say, well, our rent's going up to market, they go, well, I'm not going to pay that much, I'm going to leave. And then they go look around and they find out, wait a minute, market, yeah, is that what it means? Is market, that's what it is. You go across the street, it's that much. You go down the street, it's that much. And so all of a sudden you go, you're faced with, I'm staying in a nicer place for the same rent I'd have to pay somewhere else. Then, yeah, all of a sudden they don't leave, is what it comes down to.
Yep.
The people that do leave are the ones that don't pay, and or they're doing damage to the property and you're kicking them out because of those one or two reasons, is what, yep, I've seen in my 35 years of doing this on the deal.
Yep.
Let's talk about your future. What are you thinking to do now that you've already gone through really two cycles, as far as I see it? You went through the massive gain cycle up front. Then you went through the cooling, yep, off cycle of 2022. And the interest rates going up and crashing the values down. Now we're back out of that cycle, and you're into the third cycle, which is, you know, the prices have come down, and the market is makes sense again. It's not a steal deal situation, except for the properties where people are losing them because they paid too much and the interest rates are getting them. So we are getting some of those deals. But it's back to normal again, where you can go buy a piece of real estate, make money with it, and live with it. What do you see yourself doing now that the market, you're in your third cycle of the market?
Yeah, so that's what I'm waiting for. So I didn't do any deals last year, passive deals. I did two the year before that. So, you know, I'm looking for some quality deals. And I have heard that there's been quite a few deals out there that have, you know, where the owners turned the keys back into the bank. So the bank is now where the bank used to, you know, fire sale these properties back in 2008. It seems like now they're trying to operate these properties until the market turns. I don't see that lasting too long before the bank gets tired of it. So I'm guessing we're going to see some much better deals coming up later this year, early next year. So that's what
I'm looking for. I think you're a little behind the curve on that one, Mike, because the extend and pretend theory the banks had, let's just keep hoping, yeah, pushing it out, hoping the interest rates come flying back down. People realize now those interest rates have not come flying back down. And so a lot, yeah, of these things, the banks have started foreclosing on these, and we've gotten them. I know a lot of investors that were big time at one time when they were just flashing to cash, and now they're out there wishing they had to done it. Hey, I appreciate you coming on, sharing your story, and I hope you have a great time in Hawaii. Sorry to miss you at the expo. But the rest of you out there, remember this, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. And if you want to be on my bus, text the word bus to 88007. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Wamsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.